Step 24. Fear not death, accept it. Live life. From the ego's opinions come its considerations and needs. From its considerations and needs come all the contradictions of life. Because it has considerations and needs, the ego can be contradicted. Contradictions create anguish and emotional upset. Perhaps by now you've had a chance to read the booklet that comes with this program, Weight Loss for the Mind. In that booklet, I discuss how you can, by changing your expectancy, having less opinions, by working on your emotions and desires, you can eliminate 90% of all the anguish in your life. Of course, the central anguish we all have to eliminate is the fear of death. When you see people walking down the street, they are perpetually concerned about death. Most people have one or two death thoughts every hour of their waking life. It's not actually physical death necessarily, the act of leaving the earth plane, but as I said before, it's the death of things that scares them. Death of a relationship, death of a rhythm, that sort of stuff. As you begin to embrace this infinity within you, you can get out of most of the anguish of life by being free inside yourself, accepting flow, accepting that today you're here and tomorrow you're not necessarily here. One of the meditations that I'd like you to do as a part of expanding your awareness is to imagine yourself floating up through the atmosphere, into the stratosphere and beyond. And then look back at the Earth. Now in your mind's eye, move the Earth forward to some future date. Look at the planet and take a moment to see how the planet would be in, say, 200 years' time. Observe the planet with you not there. It's a powerful exercise. As you observe the planet continuing, evolving, children are born, events are happening, societies are rising and falling, love, mayhem, whatever, it's all happening and you are not present. As you observe the world with you not present, you can see the state of the planet's evolution when you aren't here. You come to an acceptance of the fact that being here and not being here isn't any different. You have contributed to the world mind. You contributed to the emotion. Hopefully you contributed in a positive way to the spirituality of all our people. You are a memory, and you are an eternal memory, so you will be eternally remembered. Not necessarily by the people who are alive 200 years from now, but in the Akashic record, in the totality of our human evolution, the collective unconscious. Your place is there. It's sacred, holy, spiritual. It's a part of all things. So by meditating from above, you can get to the point where you realize, one day I will not be here, and that's okay. So by not being fearful of death, you can make death a friend. In your meditation, you can go down deep inside yourself and visualize death as this grim little gremlin or dwarf that's rather bothersome, constantly running around and causing you trouble. Make death a friend. Get death to walk up to you. Get death to walk with you in life. That way you can put it to one side and accept it without any resistance. In your mind's eye, call the dwarf of death over and tell it you want to kiss it. Run your finger through the dwarf's hair and pull its head back and then kiss it. And when you do, bite its tongue out and spit it out and push the dwarf down and make it sit in the corner. Say, listen, you little tongueless dwarf. You sit here in silence till I call for you and don't bug me. When I'm ready, we'll go to the next dimension hand in hand as friends. Please don't take it personally, my biting your tongue out like that, but I need you to be in silence. I love you. Wait here, I shall be back for you one day. Half of the fear of change that we experience is actually the fear of not knowing. By now, you will already be, hopefully, in a state of not having to know. You don't have to know all the time. So if you don't know how it feels after death, it doesn't matter. You didn't know what life was going to feel like before you got started. So accept and pull out of the insecurity. Then pull out of the insecurity around the death of things. Nothing is permanent. Enjoy your relationships while you can. They may last a lifetime, they may not. Enjoy the place you're in while you can. It may last a lifetime, it may not. Enjoy the job. And know that when things change, they change to help you. They change to liberate you and take you to a different place. Don't hold on and don't worry about things coming and going. If you try to hold on to a person, you suffocate them and they flee. Remember, love is like the 49 bus that runs down through London, along King's Road, down Oakley Street and into Battersea. There will always be another one along in a minute. There's 2.5 billion people out there of the opposite sex. And if you're bisexual, there's 5 billion people to bat at. So there isn't any shortage of love. You can find another partner. Remember, the person that you're with isn't absolutely, totally the only one out there, especially if your energy's going up. If you have the energy of a slug in a puddle, I'm sorry, because it might be tough for you. But people are attracted to energy because energy is life. Energy is the only real currency, the only real security. When you create energy, you create life for yourself. And in creating energy, you heighten other people's security. It makes them feel safer. So think about what you're going to do today that creates energy. In creating energy, you're affirming life. And people respond to that very positively because they're petrified of death. When people are walking along, remember, they're thinking about dying. That's one of their main concerns. Because keeping you alive is the main function of the ego. And it takes to its job with an enormous amount of emotion and anguish. So, what will you do today to affirm life? What will you do today to create energy? Is there a friend you can ring up and inspire them a little? Or cheer them up? Is there something you can paint today to clean, to freshen up? What can you do for your physical body? What can you do for your emotions? What can you do today that says, I embrace life? Get used to the idea of the planet's eventual condition with you not here, and bit by bit, the fear begins to back off. Say to yourself, I accept being here, I accept not being here. There's no difference in the condition because there's no high and there's no low. There's no life and there's no death. There's just a perpetual infinity within you. As you come out of the ego and you come out of the intellect and logic, you won't care anymore. It's only the intellect that seeks to live on Earth perpetually. It's only the intellect that has fear. Within the infinite self, you can't die. You'll never be more alive than the moment after you're dead. It will be an amazement to you. One of the other things you're going to find out is how light you are, because the physical body is jolly heavy to schlep around. Every morning you wake up and you think, oh my God, I've got to schlep this 150 pounds around somewhere today. Gravity is heavy. It pulls you down to the earth and makes you exert muscular effort. If you've ever had an out-of-body experience, you'll know that when you come up out of the body, the first thing you notice is the incredible lightness of being. So develop that lightness of being. Be like a spirit rather than a dumpy, heavy physical ego. Be a spirit. Take life in a light-hearted way. Laugh a lot. Be responsible. Be ordered. Be disciplined. Laugh, laugh. Remember that seriousness is a disease of the ego. When you meet people that are terribly serious, what they actually are is very insecure. They are deeply trapped inside the intellect. What happens is, over a period of time, they begin to buy their own intellectual cleverness. At the beginning, that works very well, and they see how marvelous they are. They can impress people with their knowledge and with their wonderful intellectual brilliance. But then gradually what happens is, there is no place for the intellect to go. It peters out. Einstein invented everything he was ever going to invent by the age of 25. The rest of his life was spent in a futile chase to find a force he couldn't find, called the fifth force, the unifying force. He died a bitter man. He couldn't get to God through his mind. What happens to people is that they become terribly cerebral, intellectual, and serious, and they try to make their mind their God. And bit by bit, the mind can't sustain being God because there's a limit to what the intellect can discover and know. In the end, they become angry and fearful. So if you really fear death, you've probably made your intellect your God. Take the mind to one side and tell it, hey, little intellect, you're jolly handy when it comes to working out the bank balances, but you're not God. You're just a mind, and there's a limit to how much you're going to discover in this lifetime, and there's a limit to your usefulness. So back off and shut up. Once you come out of mind, then you come out of stagnation, you come out of hatred, you come out of frustration. You go past the anger you experience when people don't see your mind as being as incredible as you think it is. You come out of the fact that people don't respond to this terribly arrogant mind that is swooping down on them from a great height. You become a real person. In the end, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to go from the neurotic aspects of the intellect to becoming real. Living in truth, accepting the truth, accepting what is real, not buying the ego's vision, not buying the mind that comes up with these enormous arrogances and makes itself into a false god. Thou shalt not have false gods, and the false gods thou shalt not have is your intellect. Embrace spirit. Embrace the infinity within you. It's beyond coming and going, beyond life and death. Step 25. Avoid becoming a guru. As your energy starts to climb and as you begin to release the crud from your life and move towards the infinite self, you're going to become a teacher. You may not stand up on a podium and teach, and you may not necessarily write books that teach or record audio programs, but you will be a teacher because you will teach by example, by energy. You teach others because you know the Tao, you know doing and not doing. When you become a teacher, I want you to be careful that you teach from humility, that you teach as a magnanimous person, not from ego. I've been in the sphere of the human potential movement for many years, and I've probably met 75 to 80% of all the most famous gurus, writers, motivationists, psychologists, and whatnot. If they're on the seminar circuit and they're well known for the books, at some point, I will have probably met them. Some of them are incredibly beautiful. They're human. They have weaknesses. They fail and they rise. And they're genuine. But a small percentage that are in the field are utterly, utterly grim, pompous, manipulating, hypocritical. And in normal circumstances, it takes all of your detachment and resilience not to throw up. I mean, I'm talking up Chuck City. Why? They raise their energy, people are drawn to them, then they use that power base to sustain themselves. They become money grabbers, they become egotistical, full of themselves, or they think that their philosophy is the only philosophy that exists. There is no one philosophy. Philosophy is common to everybody. It's part of our greater knowledge. You can't say, this is my philosophy, or this philosophy is better than that philosophy. Some philosophies are preferable in the sense that they liberate. Philosophies that liberate are more useful to you and I than ones that restrict. But all of them serve a purpose. Restriction serves a tremendous purpose because it allows us to understand freedom. Manipulation serves a purpose because it allows us to eventually become magnanimous and free. You can't have one without the other. Traveling around and meeting the teachers, you can see how some of them have literally bought the idea of themselves being the God. So they stand up there and attempt to do God for people. They don't do silent, I am God, like I mentioned in step one. They stand on stage doing serious amounts of look at me, and they couch it all with a fake humility and cheesy grins and phony displays of love, and deep down they're oscillating extremes of yuck. So, as you become a teacher, be careful with your energy, because you don't want to raise your energy and then come to the end of your life and look back and see how you manipulated people, how you used your knowledge to frighten people, to scare people, to maneuver them. Avoid becoming a guru. That's what this all comes down to. Don't become a guru, because if you're a saintly person, if you're a powerful person, the last thing you need is a bunch of people kissing your feet. You've got to be seriously imbalanced and seriously out to lunch to go for that. I appreciate in the Hindu philosophy they revere gurus, and I respect the ways of the Hindu, but for Western people, forget it. It isn't our game, sitting in an ashram kissing some character on the foot. No way. Teach from energy. The greatest teaching you can ever present is your example. It's you as you. Be strong. When people say it's awful, it's terrible, everything is falling apart, you say, no, it's not. It's rather beautiful. And from this falling apart will come change. And from that will develop more. Stand and teach from energy. Teach by example. Serve humanity from inside your silent charisma, your silent power, your knowledge. Teach people and build them up. And remember, you can't pick them up, because if you do, you're going to dangle their little legs in the air. You have to get underneath them and figure out who they are and what they need. So avoid becoming a guru. Teach from truth. Teach from energy. Teach from humility. So avoid becoming a guru. Don't be seduced by power and money and showbiz and glamour, because one day you'll drop dead and you'll be seriously embarrassed standing in the light of God, watching how you had this indescribable audacity to set yourself up on earth as a God. Don't use your power over people sexually or psychologically. Don't use fear. Don't rip people off. People on the path are often vulnerable, aren't they? They're trusting. Respect that. Take each person that's pulled to you, take them to the crossroads, kiss them on both cheeks, and send them on their way, wishing them Godspeed. That's the sacred way. Step 26 is physical discipline. As you probably understand now from listening to these sessions, the journey towards the infinite self is one of discipline. So it isn't an easy journey. You know, when you watch TV, people promise you the world. Send $39.95 and you can have thin thighs in 30 days. You can have this, you can have that. They tell you it's effortless. The spiritual journey is not effortless. It's a tough journey because it's the journey wherein you're going to wrestle the ego into control. It involves discipline. How much discipline you can impose upon yourself is up to you. At the beginning, you need a lot because the mind is tough. Later on, you can forgo quite a lot of the disciplines because by then, you'll have gotten into an absolute control of your mind and your emotions, and you will have a very strong sense of that infinity within you. So the disciplines can be eased off. But without discipline, you really don't have much of a chance. So you have to agree to discipline, or at least some of them. I've divided them up in the next few steps. Steps 26 to 30 are the main disciplines you need. Physical discipline is understanding that this physical body of yours is a manifestation of that infinity within you. As your energy moves up, you're going to have to become your own healer. You're going to have to understand the physical body and learn about it and care for it. You're going to have to create physical disciplines in order to not only heal your body, refresh it, but to take it to a new place. You have to make it ready to accept a new power, a power that can burn you if you're not ready. And you need the physical discipline to calm the emotions and control the ego. The first of the physical disciplines is to understand, study, and know the physical body. I've asked people in my seminars to put their finger on their pancreas. About 50% of the people in the room don't know where the pancreas is. One woman put her finger behind her ear. If you think your pancreas is behind your ear, forget it. You haven't come to an understanding of this evolution. So if you don't know, get a book on the organs of the body and study a little bit how this thing actually works. Then you have to take the body into some kind of nutritional discipline. One of the easiest ways of controlling the ego is not giving it the things that it craves. So discipline means moving from a diet that is ego-related, unhealthy and dysfunctional, to a more rarefied diet where you're eating less and sustaining more alkalinity. Carbohydrates, fats, oils, proteins are all very acid. You don't need a lot of acidity in your body. In fact, the perfect diet is more than likely going to be 80% alkaline foods and 20% acid foods. If your work is very physical and you dig ditches for a living or whatever, then perhaps 30% acid and 70% alkaline. The alkaline foods are all the foods that don't satisfy you emotionally. Fruits and vegetables, that kind of thing. They're naturally alkaline. The carbohydrates and proteins are acid. So what you have to do is begin to reduce the acidity in your body in order to have a balance. As your energy goes up, you're going to have to become your own healer. You won't be able to schlep your body around to the local doctor because the doctor's going to come out of pure TikTok. There's nothing wrong with modern medicine, but in the end, you're always your own healer. The point of physical discipline is, if you can maintain it, if you can begin to create a physical strength around yourself, your energy rises very quickly and so does your confidence. There is no one particular thing that you can do that is more powerful than physical discipline. That involves exercise, it involves understanding your physical body and getting into control of it. You don't want to be too harsh on yourself. Too tough. Some people that have very, very rarefied diets actually wind up getting very sick. It's true, isn't it? Some of the sickest people you ever meet work in health food stores. What happens is their body becomes so pure that it reacts to everything. They become allergic to fumes, paint, toxins, dyes, that kind of stuff. They become allergic to the central heating system. They become allergic to the whole of life. I know people that have gone on extremes of nutritional discipline that have started off having tremendous amounts of energy because their body detoxified and became purer, but bit, they come into the law of diminishing returns. Their body becomes so pure that it doesn't really have any crud to work on. It begins to react to everything, especially those pollutants that are part of modern life. And the people become hopeless. So the cure for that is to start eating a bit of crud if you're so refined that you're ill and allergic to everything. Going on from nutritional discipline and studying the physical body, understand that you can direct energy and light in your meditations into your physical body to enliven it. And as you center within, its energy is going to go up. The cells are going to oscillate with more power. So be kind to it. Give it as much rest and balance and as many alkaline foods as you can. Don't strain it. The other thing that's marvelous for controlling the ego is fasting. When I first started on my spiritual path, I fasted for 2 days every 9 days. Then twice a year, I fasted for 5 days. I still fast from time to time. What's beautiful about fasting, if you've never done it, is it really quietens the mind. Eating is how the ego feels secure that it isn't dying. When you fast, the ego goes very, very quiet. There are loads of good fasts you can choose from, and you don't necessarily have to fast with a total absence of nutrition. You can have a juice fast, or you can have a fast which is just water. In fact, most fasts are better if you drink loads and loads of water, as it helps you detoxify. Alternatively, you can make a broth of vegetable juices and drink that. I take loads of vegetables, especially ones that are high in potassium, and make up a soup of potatoes, green beans, onions, cauliflower, parsley, and I boil it up and skim off just the juice and drink that during my fast. Fasting really helps you get into control. Of course, it works as a weight loss technique. However, it doesn't help you with perpetual weight loss, because although you might be losing a pound a day while you're fasting, when you start eating again, it's really easy to put the weight back on. But it certainly allows your whole digestive system to relax and release. If your digestion is slightly out of control, fasting is a great way of bringing it back. So try it. If you've never fasted before, try a one-day fast. And say to yourself in a sacred way, I'm going to fast on Saturday. It's good to pick a weekend or a time when you're not working, because you've got time off to concentrate upon yourself, to walk in nature, to remain silent. You could do a one-day fast, leave it for a week or two, and then do a two-day fast. Once or twice a year, try a five-day fast. If you have blood pressure problems, low blood sugar, that kind of stuff, you should get advice from a professional before you begin your fast, so they can advise you of the best way of handling it. Once you stop eating, the body starts to eat itself. And what it eats first is the crud. So if your body feels imbalanced, the simplest way to heal it is to fast. And while the body is busy eating crud, the mind is also quiet, so you can get in touch with what your body really needs. You'll know which vitamins and minerals you're missing, where the toxicity is. You'll be able to seek out the treatment that you need. Obviously, don't use fasting instead of proper medical advice if you have a problem. Use the technology that's available if you need to use it. But most everything that goes on in your body, in the day-to-day sense, is fixable. That's enough for physical discipline. Now, come with me to the next session, and I'll talk to you about emotional, mental, and philosophical discipline, which will help you with how you handle fear, how you handle emotion, and how you process your feelings so you can liberate yourself from debilitating opinions and step into a more infinite perception. Thank you.